business is competitive and business is meant to be competitive. And so, like, if someone's worked something out and they're making a lot of money from it, great. Like, that's awesome for them, but it doesn't necessarily help the industry. And for me, being a part of the Insect Protein Association of Australia, I'm a little bit more industry focused because I know at the end of the day that yes, you might be able to make money if you figure this situation out. However, you're probably going to make a lot more money if the industry grows and it was a lot bigger.
We're going through something absolutely historic.
Technologies across the board are growing exponentially.
It's a disruption that's going to completely redefine the way businesses compete.
In the next decade, we're going to lose 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies.
The exponential growth of computing is continuing.
AI is nowhere near its full potential.
Whether you like it or not, that the future cannot be stopped by anyone.
Hi there, everybody. This is Mark Verbenkoff, and welcome to episode number 138 of the Future Tech and Foresight podcast. So I'm finally going to be talking about insect cultivation on the podcast today. It has been a number of years that I've wanted to have this topic on the podcast. I think it's interesting. It's maybe a little bit controversial in certain circles, but I think that there is certainly a lot of growth that is going to be happening in this industry, not just with the technologies involved, but as an industry as a whole. So I'm really happy to have Zach Schubert, the founder of Shoebugs, on the podcast today, and he's also the first Australian guest to come onto the podcast. So I'll get into Zach's profile in a second. I just want to touch on a little bit about what we're talking about today to kind of set the stage. So we are going to be talking about, one, of course, why insect cultivation. So I'm sure many of you listening to the podcast, you're interested in other technologies and other industries. So you've probably heard of some of the benefits of insect cultivation. We dive into that. We talk about why pet foods are used first, and human consumption of insect protein specifically is most likely a second stage for insect farming. And then we also really interestingly talk about the scaling issues and challenges, and I guess you could say hurdles, of insect farming and the entire industry, and how over the next couple of years, again, particularly with Australia, but I think it relates to the larger global industry as a whole, is how those scaling changes or possibilities are actually going to come about. And then, of course, one of my favorite things to talk about is what the future is going to look like, particularly with insect cultivation and farming. So I think it's a really interesting episode. It's a really good introduction episode to insect farming for anybody who hasn't learned too much about it. Zach's a great guy, a really interesting guest, certainly knows his information when it comes to insect farming and crickets in particular. There are many different type of insects, but we talk about crickets specifically in this episode. So hopefully you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Again, really good introduction. So just quick little bit about Zach. So he has a nutrition and exercise science degree, and this was actually one of the key reasons that led him to starting insect farming to begin with. Interestingly enough, he's currently ranked 13th in the world for beach volleyball, and still has a goal. He's still actively moving towards going to the Olympics for beach volleyball. We actually had to reschedule the podcast a couple times because he was busy training. And as you'll hear about more in the episode itself, he has a history with dry land farming, and specifically orange orchards, which again fit in nicely with the work that he's doing for insect cultivation and insect farming. But we'll get a little bit more into Zach's profile and why he's moving into cricket farming and what he thinks are the benefits of it in the episode. So hopefully you guys get as much benefit as I did from the episode, and that you maybe start to shift your understanding or perspective when it comes to insect farming, which Zach certainly helped me do. So without further ado, we can move right into the discussion. Great. Well, thanks, Zach, for coming onto the Future Tech and Foresight podcast. It's great to have you from, I guess you're further than across the pond, but it's great to have you're my first guest from Australia and my first guest to talk about insect cultivation and cricket farming. So it's great to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. That's a bit of an honor. The first one from yeah, Australia. Absolutely. I like that.
Yeah, well, I've been meaning to have somebody on to talk about insect farming for a long time. And I actually had about 3 or 4 guests lined up last year, but I guess because COVID was still kind of there, people dropped off, and you know, I mean, we'll get into the chaos, I'm sure, that some kind of aspects of cricket farming is. So I'm glad to have you on today.
Yeah. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So the as I mentioned before, what I like to start off with every guest is like, what brought you to this work? What brought you to this industry? Was there like a spark? Was it a family business? Like, what made you get into cricket farming in particular, and I guess insect cultivation in general?
Yeah. So I was very lucky, I believe. So I, for the last 10 years, I've been playing beach volleyball at like an international level, and I'm still currently playing today. This will probably be my last like Olympic cycle that I'll be a part of. But like during, like coming from Australia, it's the region that we play beach volleyball in for the Olympic qualifying process is like through Asia. So we spend a lot of time traveling through Asia. And obviously it's a pretty different culture to Australia, and the way that we eat versus the way that typical Asian countries, especially when you start going to places like Thailand and Indonesia, where like obviously it's a bit different to Japan, but there is a big insect eating culture through like Southeast Asia, that's for sure. Yep. And so for me, traveling and spending a lot of time traveling through those countries there, you do get exposed to a different way of eating, especially when you go through the markets. And it's a bit of fun. Like, it was fun to go there and like eat insects and like watch people scream and like, you know, right, just right. Not liking them. Right. And, but then, home life for me, like where I grew up, like I grew up in a small country town in Australia in South Australia called Loxton. And we're like a dry land farming, so like all your cereal crops. And we do have an orange orchard because we're on the one and only kind of major river system in Australia, which is the River Murray, Darling Basin. And so it's just like farming's always been there in my life. I've always loved health because of the sport. So I studied a nutrition and exercise science degree. And through my study, like I was just doing bits and pieces with like sustainable foods and like where your food comes from and how good it is for you and like what's the process from how it gets from the farm to your plate. And like insects were having a massive boom during like 2018. Like there was a lot of hype around them. And it was like, oh, this is kind of perfect. Like I love farming. I love health. I've eaten insects all through Asia. And I was like, why not? Like, why not try and do this on the farm? So like my old man, he started to slow down. He wanted to retire. And because of just the labor intensive work of like dry land and traditional farming versus insects, it's like insects you can do until you're, you know, 60, 70, 80 even. Like it's not a very labor intensive job. So it's like, this is a kind of a perfect situation that's just kind of bloomed from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Kind of like a mix of all the perfect different aspects that come together. Well, I didn't know that insect farming was so non-labor intensive. So I guess we'll have to get into that in a little bit. But I first want to ask you, why crickets? So I know, and we talked about this before, I know that there are many other type of insects that are part of this insect cultivation industry, if you will. But why crickets? Is it one of the easier ones? Is it one of the more prolific ones? Curious to start off there.
I would have said like when we first started, crickets were the easy ones. Now as I've gotten further into the industry, it's like anything. When you start a new job or you start a new university degree or you learn about something, like you think you're an expert. Yeah. And then as soon as you get more and more into it, you're like, wow, I don't know anything anymore. Yeah. So obviously like insects are super complicated because they're not like traditional like farming animals, like, you know, sheep, pigs, cows, like, you know, where we know a lot about it. And the industry is also quite open, whereas with insect farming, the insect industry is quite closed off in terms of people don't really like to share their information about how they farm and what they do. And right. especially here in Australia, like out of all the farms that are in Australia, so there's about five major farms, and I've only have conversations with one other farmer about how to, it's a weird one, man. So we have a pretty big pet industry here in Australia, and the pet industry, like reptiles and snakes and all those kind of things, they love crickets. Right. They absolutely love crickets, and people will pay a decent amount of money for a high quality cricket if you can grow it. And it's tough to grow that. But if you can achieve that, then they're more than happy to pay the money, because reptiles are worth a pretty penny as well. So they want premium food. But that was not my intention when I first got into insect farming. Like when I first got into it, I was like, I want to make my own protein powder. I want to make my own like sustainable food. And because I have my nutrition background, I was like, bang, I want to make some protein powder. I want to make some supplements. Like that's the pathway that I want to go down with crickets. And I picked crickets because they're super high in protein, like compared to any other insect, and they're reasonably easy to grow. And that was my first initial thought of like why I picked crickets, and because they're also a bit of a gateway insect for a lot of people to eat. That's
right. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the name of the other insects, but I think there was something like a larva type or some sort of, I mean, I don't want to say the term maggot, but it looks like a
black soldier fly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I think that there's this, I believe the term is like a yuck factor or something like that, right?
An ick factor.
And I think like crickets, even for me, and I think I've only eaten like ants in the Amazon jungle or something like that. Crickets are much more palatable when I'm thinking about it than some of these other things. So maybe it makes sense that crickets would be.
Yeah. I feel like, so like with crickets as well, man. So like what my goal was when I initially started, like I was like, I don't want to be serving crickets just for like people to eat like whole, like with a bit of flavoring, you know, like I wanted to make protein powder, pasta, corn chips. Like I wanted to make foods that would actually hide the insect. Because as a Western cultures, like we've always been told to kill insects and make sure there's no insects in the house and get rid of them. And it was always that, like that's how you get brought up. And so for us, it's not normal. So if you can hide the insect in the food, like that was what I wanted to do and wanted to achieve. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm still aiming for that. It's just that kind of when I first started, I actually didn't realize how big you needed to be and the scale that you needed to be on to be able to achieve that. And we're heading in the right direction, but it's just going to take a bit longer than I initially thought.
So why do you need to have a large scale operation in order to move into the human consumption industry? Is there like, are there like heavy regulations around that? Or is it just because you need so many more crickets to turn into the powder?
So like, easy answer is you just need a lot of crickets to be able to, and because it's, so when you're dealing with powder too, so you have a thing called live weight, which is obviously there's a bit of moisture in the crickets, which is taken out of the crickets through the harvesting and like killing process of the insect. And then you dehydrate them and roast them, or people have different techniques, but just dehydrating the cricket where all the moisture is then removed from it. Mm-hmm. And you're actually only left with a quarter of the moisture. Dang. So when you're dealing in live weight, you're like, oh, I've got a kilo. But when you get to a powdered form, you've got 250 like grams of powder. Now that's obviously like super high in protein still, because it sits around, depending on what you feed them and the diet they have, but it sits between like 60 and 70% protein.
Wow.
So it's obviously great, right? But the thing is, you then need to like go through a pretty extensive process to get them to the powder, and then like 250 grams, like that's one person, and they might have that across like three or four meals.
Yeah.
And that's only one person, and you need a kilo of crickets to do that. So the actual scale that you need to be on, like if you want to change, like even if you, and Australia's small, Australia's like 27 million people. Mm-hmm. And like, so it's even smaller than like the state of California, right? And but like, even just to be able to feed people in Australia, just to change one meal per day of like to have insects in it, it would be dramatic. Or like even just one protein bar, it'd be dramatic of like the scale that you need. Mm. And there's not that many farms in Australia.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So I'm also assuming that if there's not many farms in Australia, they probably haven't been around for a long time either, which means that the kind of industry knowledge might not be around in Australia in order to enable a scaling up, like an easy form of scaling up or a quick or a facilitated scaling up of some of these farms.
The industry, like the actual live food industry, it's been around for forever and a day. I can't remember off the top of my head, the oldest company here is Pisces. And I'm pretty sure they've been around since like the 80s, like growing insects.
Okay.
So they have been around for a decent amount of time. However, because it's like they've got the monopoly on Australia, they don't want to release their secrets about how they do stuff and how to grow them. Like, so I started a YouTube channel about growing crickets. It's just called Shoe Bugs. You can look it up online. And it's I obviously tell people how to grow crickets, and the reason why I'm so open to talking about how to grow crickets is because if people don't understand where their food comes from, and if people don't understand like the process behind it nowadays, they will not be interested in eating it. Like, you get asked questions all the time. Like you're seeing it now more so than ever with farming, and farmers are under attack all the time. With how they're actually producing and growing food. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just that like you need to be prepared to answer those tough questions. So if I can have everything online where everyone can see it and I'm not hiding anything, then I think it's really, really good for the industry. And then it also can encourage people to get into the industry, because for a lot of like traditional farming nowadays, like if you want to know how to grow a cow, you can look it up online.
Sure.
You can find it. Right. So like I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not doing something that is like incredibly difficult and complicated. It is like you're farming insects, and eventually in 20 years time, 30 years time, when this industry is a lot bigger, more people are going to know about it. So why would I hold on to the secrets now? Because eventually it's going to come out anyway. So for me, I'm more than happy to see the industry flourish in Australia and flourish around the world. But I did get a lot of hate for it. A lot of people were like, yeah, a lot of other cricket farmers and insect farmers were not happy when I started the YouTube channel. But that's competition. That's business. That's the way it is.
There you go. Like, there you go. Yeah. Interesting. So in your little intro, you talked about being interested in sustainability. And I think that this is kind of a key point whenever I've heard about insect cultivation in general, right? So there's there's all these ideas that because of climate change, because of traditional agriculture and all of its waste products, but as well as like wasted inputs, like high amounts of like fresh water being used, for instance, for cows. Insects, on the other hand, are much more sustainable, and they require a lot less inputs and a lot less resources to kind of come up with the same or roughly the same amount of calories in the end. And is that wildly off base? Am I correct? Can you educate me about sustainability?
So like for sure, if you were just looking at like what resources the cricket uses, if you were taking it out in the wild, you'd be like, yeah, this is the most sustainable thing ever. But the thing is, you're intensively farming them, like in a facility. So crickets obviously need an environment that like optimizes growth, right? Which then optimizes the amount of money and profit you can make for your business too. So it does go hand in hand. It's pretty like, it's not as clear cut as just chucking them in a shed and watching them grow. Sure. They need about 26 degrees and 60% humidity. And so there's like a running cost to that business as well. But when you're talking about like other sort of like factory farming setups, like it's nowhere near the power outages. And like we have things like solar in place, and like we're looking at getting batteries as well on our facility so we can go off grid and we don't have to worry about having, you know, being a, you know, power wasting kind of system. Like, we actually just making sure that we like fully solar, which would be really cool moving forward. But in terms of like feed, it's insane. So we're like a traditional grain growing family as well. We've had sheep and we've had cattle in the past. And like for us, we've found that we only need about 2 kilos of food to make a kilo of body weight with crickets.
Wow. Okay.
That's it's like
it's considerably
it's
less. Yeah.
It's insane. And yeah. then like a liter. And I'm not 100% sure. You can look them up online. You can get like rough estimates for like cows and sheep, but it doesn't even come close. And then also like, so it's like a liter of water too, because like they're not like mammals. They don't sweat. They're an insect. So like, that's why you have to regulate their temperature and their environment so intensely, because they can't do it themselves. Right. But so when it comes to water usages, they don't sweat and they don't lose moisture. So they don't actually need a lot of water either, which is awesome for us. And because we have an orange orchard as well as a dryland farm, like we just use what is like on the farm to feed them. So we don't have to buy in like anything else, which is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And you might not use, I'm not sure what you use the word. We call it like a circular economy or like circular. Yeah. So making sure that if we are doing something on the farm, it can be like repeated and it's sustainable. So by us growing our own crops and growing our oranges, like, and making sure, because we still do sell our own grain and we do sell oranges, but then we start using like lower quality grain that would be either sold to feedlots or it might not even get to market and sold for a good price. And then also the oranges, like oranges and orange prices can fluctuate depending on what's happening with import and export of oranges or other fruit in Australia. But I know for us right now, oranges are not a good price. And so we're putting majority of our oranges through our cricket farm, because that's like a better way. We get a better bang for our buck.
Yeah.
So we're just only trying to use stuff from the farm, which is then it adds to the sustainability. Like, we don't have to worry about flying in something from overseas to be able to produce a product here in Australia, which is really nice. So yes, they are sustainable from like a resource point of view. And then like, obviously if you've got things in place with power, you can do a really good job at not being too reliant on like the grid, the power grid, to be able to supply. But then the problem with cricket farming and why it's taking so long to scale is because labor costs are super, like, they're pretty expensive in Australia. So obviously there's a lot of farms throughout Southeast Asia and cricket farms, and we could buy cricket powder from overseas to be able to produce a product here in Australia. Mm-hmm. But then you have like, you know, air travel and import costs and all these things that actually just makes it more expensive. So it's still cheaper to grow here in Australia. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as things evolve in the industry where you can have like robots and things are more set up where you don't need as much labor, if you could eliminate the feeding and the breeding soil processes, then pretty much there is nothing else to do on the farm. Like, that's still done by human hand. And if we get to a stage where we don't have to do that and robots take it, like, it will nearly be a it will just be a shed there working by itself, which will be pretty pretty fascinating.
Right.
And then it will be super sustainable. Like, nothing will be able to compete with it then, because you will remove pretty much majority of the cost, which is just labor costs.
That's really interesting. So you must be paying attention to Elon Musk's I believe it's the Tesla Optimus robot. I can't remember the exact name. Optimum, something like that. That's able to do like a lot of the tasks that I guess a modern worker in farming, manufacturing, supply, logistics, etc. would be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be like, I think it would be quite complicated for like being able to do the breeding soils, like picking up and removing the breeding soils, because we're quite vertical, our farm. Okay. Like, we're not like there are big farms in Canada actually that have more of a barn kind of setup where it's just like all on the floor and it's just a big wide barn. Whereas the angle that we've gone for is like to try and go vertical to like increase the attitude of like, you don't need a lot of land space. And now compared to like traditional farming, obviously you are using a lot less land, even if you did have a big shed and growing them on the ground. But for us, we go vertical. So we're about 6 meters high with our containers built up. And then we have like a little lift that we go along and, you know, feed and water and take the breeding soils out. And that's that, but even then, like for us to run our facility, and we're producing around about 10 to 15 kilos of crickets like a week, which is not an outrageous number compared to some of the bigger farms in America and Canada. But like that's only taking us 10 hours of work per week to do. So, and what I meant by before about labor intensive compared to traditional farming is you're not heavy lifting. So you're not like breaking, you're not breaking your back to move machinery and fix machinery. And like it's quite, in terms of like heavy lifting work, it's very, very minimal, which is very, very nice, like as you get older. So.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Very interesting. Should we move on to the I mean, you also mentioned at the beginning that you had interest in health, right? So obviously with your beach volleyball sport work, you would be very focused on getting the right kind of nutrients into your body so that you could be an optimum performer. How do crickets compare? And I guess this is cricket protein at the end, compared to, say, whey protein or pea protein that's now starting to become a little bit more popular. Is it just protein at the end of the day and there's no difference, or are there differences between these various ones, and how do crickets compare to that?
Yeah, so there's obviously like very rough numbers about this stuff like online, and you can go and look at it. And because it's probably also because it's so secretive, like the industry, like no one really knows what other farms feed each other's crickets. And so the numbers can vary, which is why I mentioned before, like you have about 60 to 70% protein is a bit of a wide range. And then you get some like real loose numbers that get thrown out there. About so you have like calcium, it's like three times the amount of calcium compared to milk. You have double the amount of iron compared to spinach. Like yeah, you hear those like kind of things get thrown out there, and like crickets have all essential amino acids, like all nine essential amino acids, which is awesome, which is pretty obvious because it's an animal product, right? But obviously it's quite interesting here in Australia, and I know that like places like Canada and America, like the more kind of dominant insect growing countries in the West, have this problem is they can obviously produce a lot of powder, but it's still not cheap enough for people to make the jump over to it because they don't quite know what to do with it as well. Like as we get older and the more modern day people, like we don't really like cooking. I'm not sure if it's the same in Canada and America, but here in Australia, like less and less people, like they don't enjoy cooking and having to make things from scratch. They want something that's quick and easy, like the world's busy and it's all sped up. So they don't want to have to be making too much stuff at home. So when you give someone a bag of cricket flour and you're like, this is really high in protein, iron, all essential amino acids, they're like, cool, what do I do with it? Now, obviously you can make pancakes, you can make smoothies, you can do all these things, but it's like it's not still like when you have whey protein, it's great. Like it's a pretty neutral flavor tasting, and so are crickets, but like when you get whey, like you can just go bang straight to a smoothie and like it won't affect the taste at all. Whereas like there's still a lot of product development that needs to happen with crickets to be able to make it like it is a quite a neutral taste, but it's still not as smooth as whey. Now, and obviously whey blends really well into smoothies because it's pretty much like a milk product. But you know, there are a lot of advantages still playing in like factors for crickets. So like if you're lactose intolerant, like you can't be having whey protein, right? And there was a study done recently too comparing all the whey proteins. It's from the U from a university in the UK. I'll have to try and like I could try and find the study, I'll send it through. But it actually talks about the bioavailability of cricket protein versus like whey protein versus pea protein. And like it's the highest bioavailability. Cannot remember the number off the top of my head, but it's the highest bioavailability in the human body. So when you're comparing all these other sources of protein, like insects is phenomenal for humans. So I know for me, when it comes to like obviously the cost of production, and it will get lower. Like as I grow in size and in scale, it will go lower. But people are also going to remember too that when I'm talking about 100 grams of cricket powder, that's like close to 70 grams of pure protein. And when you're putting 100 grams of like steak, you might only be getting like 24, 25 grams of protein, right? So when it comes to cost, it's about on par for cost. It's just that like people, like when you're talking about dollars compared to protein, so because it's nearly three times the amount of protein in it, then you're actually getting more protein. So I think where the insect market can potentially head is like we shouldn't be trying to sell insect protein to just like the generic population to like cook with it for a powder. We need to be like aiming it more at like people that are influenced by like health and fitness and like gym junkies. So like people who want like something that will have super high uptake in the body, like with protein, which it obviously outdoes even just eating a steak or whey protein. But then like you also like it's a really the one thing that I'm really interested in, and I have no idea how I'm going to achieve this just yet, but like supplements, like I think it's really interesting when you start looking into like B12 supplements, for instance. So because they're like an animal life form, they have like methylcobalamin, which is like the B12 element that like produces, and it's so amazing in our body. Whereas like when you're looking at other forms of synthetic B12 supplements, it's
Cyanocobalamin.
cytocobalamin.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And so you go like, well, that's actually like made from like a small dose of cyanide, which they took in World War II, which, you know, it would actually end up kicking you over if you had too much of it. Now, it's obviously a very small amount, but it is a small amount that does cause cell damage. So, you know, if you're talking about like trying to get optimal health and you're being really conscious about what you're putting in your body, and if you're on the fence about sustainability, and I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, I 100% know
Totally
that,
fine.
but it's all connected. So with vegans and vegetarians, the ones like you can be vegan and vegetarian for a number of options. You could be, you don't like the taste of meat, you're trying to be more sustainable, or you're health conscious, right? And so for people who are maybe potentially all three, except for the cruelty to animal side of things, if you're conscious about the planet and you're also conscious about the health of your body, and that's the reason why you're vegan and vegetarian, then insects are potentially a great replacement because they are sustainable and they will give you those, like, it's not, obviously it's a living thing. It's not a synthetic product, right? No hormones, no synthetic vitamins have been putting into it. So it's like, this is amazing for those two options if that's why you're a vegan or vegetarian. So that's kind of like where I think the insect industry could potentially head. It's like into supplements and into health for people rather than just trying to tackle the general population. Like making it, if you can then crack into the fitness industry and into those things, then the generic, like the sorry, the general pop will population will eventually come on board with it, I believe.
That makes sense. Yeah, rather than creating like a cricket burger first, create your cricket protein shake, and then once that becomes a little bit more acceptable, then who knows, a couple of years later, then focus on, cricket hot dogs or something like that.
Like when people are more open to the idea, because like my mum and dad's generation, they have no interest in doing it. Like they love eating their steak for dinner, they love having their meat and three veg. It's like it's just a staple for them and they're not interested in eating any insects. But the next generation, like people like my generation and younger, who are more conscious of the planet, the impact of the planet, and like they're not so stuck in their ways just yet, it's like they will be more open to it. So if you can make it more palatable and you can make it more like, and you don't see it as like, this is good for the planet. It's like, no, this is just good for your health and good for your body. So you should be using it. Because I think at the end of the day, like people, like when it comes to supplements, especially, like no one really cares about where the supplements are coming from or what they are. If they're working and they're good for you, then they're just like, that's awesome. Like they don't really care too much. They're like, they're not really investigating it to a deeper level. Majority of people, obviously there are a lot of people that do deep dives into like where their protein powder is coming from, but if it's like super high in protein, got all nine essential amino acids, and it's a B12 supplement, then like you could get a lot of people on board with it.
Very interesting. Okay, so that sounds like a very positive side of cricket farming and insect cultivation. Maybe we can also, to balance this out, we can touch on some of maybe the challenges or some of the negative, let's say, perceptions of insect cultivation, which I'm sure your industry needs to deal with, which is constantly coming up. So we touched on kind of the ick factor before. Something that I am completely unaware of, are there any health impacts of having, let's just say, cricket, I guess you call it meal, right? Or cricket powder. What's the specific term? Is it cricket meal or is it cricket powder?
Cricket powder. Okay. Yeah. So like there are a couple of negatives. Obviously you have, like it's the same proteins that you'll find in shellfish are found in like the exoskeleton of
so potential insects. allergies
for a lot of people. So that obviously cuts out a pretty decent chunk. Like a lot of people can't have shellfish. They need to be aware of that. But then also when it comes to manufacturing too, when you're trying to manufacture a product and you are trying to make it like gluten-free or you're trying to make it like non shellfish related, then you do cut out a fair few people, like where you can get it made and what's it cross-contaminated with in facilities.
Right.
Because if you're making an insect product and people are then they're trying to sell a product that has potential contamination of shellfish, like that's a huge issue for manufacturers. Mm. So finding people that are open to having your product being made in your manufacturing, just because there's not a lot of places available in Australia that want to do that. It's a lot more available in America. Like there is a company called Exo in America that did eventually find a manufacturer that was open to doing it, but they took a long time to get there.
Mm.
And obviously you do have the yuck factor or the ick factor with insects, which can be avoided. But also deep down, like when people are still facing that moment when they have to bite into their like protein powder, like you do get people going like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to eat an insect. And
is that lessening though? Like my sense is this was a really big issue. I think you said like 2018 or something like that when there was a lot of hype for insects. My perception, and it could be wrong, but my perception is that it's not as strong as it once was. Are you kind of getting that feel? Yeah,
definitely. It's not even close to what it was.
Mm.
But like there's so many more people now pushing like edible insects. And even just like if you've got your Google alerts on for news articles with insect protein, like I do, and there's like two or three articles every single day of about edible insects. So like it is slowly growing. And you know, like I think I even know just since I've started growing crickets, like you get known as like, oh, you're the cricket guy, or like, you know, you like everyone calls me by like my company name, which is Shoebugs, the nickname and stuff. So, and all the people that you connect with, like it's all just become normal now. And so like it eventually will change. And like even like at schools here in Australia, like some schools are doing a program called Planet to Plate, and they're learning about where their food comes from. And all the school kids are super open to eating insects. Whereas like, you go into like the 40 and 50 year olds, they're like, oh, I don't really care. I'm not going to change my way.
Yeah. Well, isn't that how most things change, right? It's the older generations that, you know, sadly pass away, and new generations come and take new ideas. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sorry, I cut you off from what you were saying before about some of the other negative aspects of it.
There is probably one more negative aspect about cricket farming, but like I feel it's not really a negative. It's just maybe like people's perception of it. So because I have a YouTube channel and I'm so open and like about sharing about what I do on the farm and showing the insects, like we do get a lot of it's like, you can't have that many crickets in your bins. That's inhumane. That's not safe. Like that's not how crickets are grown in the wild. I would never eat that because you're not growing them in a humane way. And I get it. I 100% get it. Like that is definitely an important conversation, and I'm not avoiding it. However, if you took a camera to every other farm and intensive farming process that went on in the world, because intensive farming needs to happen like for the world to be able to supply enough food for the population, and we still don't even do a great job of that across the world. And so, like, if you were to stop intensive farming and factory farming today, we would run out of food so quickly. Like, it's only going to get more intense or more efficient in a sense. And so, like, insects, like, yes, I do understand that on the YouTube comments, people were like, there's too many crickets in the bin and they're eating each other and that's so cruel. However, I do try and, like, add a silver lining to it. It's like, if they're out in the wild, they'd have a lot harder life. I'm providing them with war. I'm providing them with, like, safety. I'm providing them with food, water. I'm providing them with, like, you know, there's no other predators to come and get them. They're actually living in the optimal environment. And, like, I know it's rough and I know that it sounds bad, but that's also any sort of farming where you're working with living animals. It's not as clean as what people might think. And so if you did take a camera into any sort of feedlot and intensive farming, you would find something that you don't agree with 100%.
Yeah. I've unfortunately seen a lot of those videos when I was younger. Not for crickets, but for other intensive agricultural products, I guess you could say. Yeah, and it's pretty horrendous.
It's full on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, I don't want to focus on the negative aspects too much, but one of the interesting things about this podcast is, of course, looking forward and to the future. Like, I started off talking about, well, the next 10 years, but because things are just going so insane over the last couple of years with AI and all these other emerging technologies, it's typically like, okay, well, let's look at 5 years. We talked a little bit about how people are becoming more sensitized to eating insects and crickets in general. How there's more knowledge in the industry about maybe how to scale. Are there any other things that you see within the, say, next 5 years or so that will change the industry for better or for worse?
I think people, and I know it's the same in Canada, like, you would have seen the price of food, you know, like, skyrocket in, like, the last 2 years. So I think when obviously, like, you do have the cost of running your facility and running and, like, growing the crickets as well. But I think as the technology gets better, we get more efficient at growing crickets and doing it cheaper, the price of crickets can like come down. And people are going to be more open to eating it because it doesn't hurt the bank account too much compared to, like, maybe other food that they used to have to, like, pick and choose. So, like, I think in the next 5 years, the cost of, like, cricket powder will come down. But then if, like, innovation and product development is also happening a lot within the industry, then, like, you're going to see a lot more products that are a lot more appetizing for people to eat. So whether that's the B12 supplements, whether that's just, like, even, like, any sort of supplements that can be, you know, like, pulled from crickets, but then, like, the protein powders, or, you know, you mentioned burgers before, if, like, someone can make them taste amazing and look appealing to the eye, then in the next 5 years, it's only going to be a positive. However, I know that a lot of people that have set out on this journey to make those products, like, it's not that you didn't have people eating it, and it's not like you couldn't make a good product. A lot of people couldn't get their hands on the crickets. So for, like, the company Exo over in America, the biggest problem they ran into is they couldn't find a human consumption cricket farm to be able to get, like, the products that they needed. So they actually had to sit down with a cricket farmer being like, hey, we're going to make a product from crickets. Can we buy crickets off you? And the cricket farmer was like, that's insane. I've never even thought about selling people crickets. So, and now obviously that was a few years ago, and people have been more focused on cricket farming for human consumption. However, like, I know for me, I'll get multiple emails a day, well, not so much a day, like, so for a week, people ask me for cricket flour, and I got none. I have no cricket flour to sell to them. So it's what's holding back the industry in Australia, and probably, well, maybe not so much in America, but definitely here in Australia right now, the thing that's holding them back is the amount of cricket flour that's available at a good cost. So
interesting. Yeah. You know, over the last, I don't know how long it's been, let's say 4 or 5 years, you've probably heard of those Beyond Burger Beyond
Burgers.
Meat.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And those things just absolutely exploded. And if you look at all the ingredients, I mean, there's a lot of ingredients in there. So they created some, you know, interesting product out of, you know, whatever kind of culinary magic that they're able to do. But if the main issue is not having enough cricket powder to create these products, then it just sounds like there needs to be a couple more years of, you know, the supply chain being fully built out before this thing can kind of take off.
Yeah. And like, I think there will always be a place for like edible insects. And because it's like, maybe not so much in the Western world, because it's not so deeply rooted into our culture. Like, you know, if Beyond Burger took off, you would still see people eating crickets in a traditional sense in like in South America and in like Southeast Asia as well, right? Because it's embedded in their culture, you'd still see people like eating it. So I think like humans are always going to eat insects, even if a better technology comes along, because the Beyond Burger, like, that is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to compare that, like if that's cost efficient versus like a cost efficient cricket, you're probably going to like lean on the Beyond Burger, because like it's more appetizing and you're not eating like an insect as such. So like if that industry evolves, that's awesome for humans and awesome for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there will always be cricket farms, because like reptiles and pets and snakes and lizards and all those things have to eat. Like that industry is not going anywhere. Like humans, we love our pets. Like, I know that when it comes down to it, like a lot of people feed their pet before they feed themselves, type thing.
Sure.
So that the industry is always going to be around, and cricket farming will always be around. It's a matter of like where the industry evolves to. And like, I am more than happy to be a part of it, and I'm excited for if that side of the industry evolves. But as I've got more and more into the industry, like we've definitely put more of a focus on the reptile market and the pet market, because it's already established and it's easy to fall into it. But then, you know, the human consumption stuff, super, super fascinating. And it will always be fascinating. And just we'll see where that ends up, I guess.
Okay, interesting. Maybe then kind of, I guess, one of the final questions looking at the time here as well. I don't know if we looked over it, but what is the challenge or the hurdle that the industry needs to get over in order to increase the scale of the crickets? Like if we're looking at just your farm, for instance, you know, you mentioned before the recording that you're, once this call is done, you're going to have to run back and take care of a bunch of problems. Are there any problems that are general to the industry that is slowing or holding back the scaling up of cricket farming?
Yeah, so the scaling up is obviously a big one. So we have a lot of government funding here in Australia for projects and for farming. Mm-hmm. Nothing at all for insects. There's like absolutely no government support for insect farming. And now for me, like I'm not going to rely on like a handout from the government to make or break my business. Mm-hmm. Like I'm more than happy to invest and grow my business and figure it out. Like that's the exciting part about starting a business. And so for me, like the facility that I've just built, it was like fully funded by like myself and my family after we've like built a bit of momentum within the industry, a few more sales, and we can see the opportunity. So we're like, hey, let's build a facility. Probably along with having no government funding, probably one of the other big issues is about like how secretive the industry is. What I mentioned before about like people not communicating about how to grow crickets, because what I need to go take care of after I finish this podcast is I need to figure out why my crickets are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is going to tell me how, like, why my crickets are dying. And we have some theories around like ventilation, overpopulation, inbred, like all these like issues are kind of floating around, but no one, and I've put this stuff out on my YouTube channel, my Instagram, I've reached out to people, and like obviously the people that I've reached out to, they come back and they're like, hey, I wish I could help you. But there are people that are you don't even hear from them. And I can tell you that the issue that I've got on my farm right now I believe every single farm has gone through it, like across the world, every single farm has gone through it. And the ones who have worked it out, they've gone, cool, worked it out, not going to tell anyone.
Right.
So that's obviously a big issue too, because if people can't get over this hurdle, then the industry can't actually grow. And for some people, they're like, awesome, I get to make a lot of money from it. That's great. Right. And to be honest, I can't blame them. Like they business is competitive and business is meant to be competitive. And so like if someone's worked something out and they're making a lot of money from it, great. Like that's awesome for them, but it doesn't necessarily help the industry. And for me, being a part of the Insect Protein Association of Australia, I'm a little bit more industry focused because I know at the end of the day that yes, you might be able to make money if you figure this situation out. However, you're probably going to make a lot more money if the industry grows and it was a lot bigger. So yeah, it's a dicey, it's a dicey world, to be honest, here in Australia with insect farming.
Very interesting. Yeah, I mean, this is I don't think that this issue is unique to Australia, nor is it unique to the insect farming industry in Australia or in the world. I mean, many other industries I've heard on the podcast as well that this is happening as well. And I guess it's just something that needs to be well figured out in a I don't know how. I don't sorry as a podcaster and a tech guy. I mean, who knows? Maybe artificial intelligence. Ask ChatGPT in a year once that information's in there and it spits out the answer. But
Well, this is the thing, right? So I've built my own like GPT, like that's connect it's fully connected to there'd be about like 100 different research papers that I've built it off of. I've got it to like memorize and take information from. So it's only drawing information from those. And like it's amazing. I can ask it questions about like, what do you think about this situation? And like, I'm doing it currently with my feed to like optimize my feed for the optimal growth. And like, you can keep track of it. It's a super, super handy tool. And the thing is, for me, like with my YouTube channel, if we do more research with papers and that, this information will be out there in the next 5 years. Like it will, I'm pushing for it to be out there in the next 5 years. And like, I believe there's still so many more barriers to entry that this is not one of them. Like people need to have one, the money, two, the time and effort that it takes to get to the scale that we're at. And then like people need to be able to go and do the work because like at the end of the day, everyone can have an idea, but if you don't actually go and action it, then like you're not. So I don't think that the issue maybe that I'm going through right now is the sole purpose why people don't get into insect farming. But I think if you can get through this situation and I can educate people on this situation, then the industry will be in a better situation as a whole. So,
Very interesting. Well, I'm glad that we were able to touch. I never thought it would be possible, but bringing artificial intelligence into the insect cultivation industry, it's a
I love
completely
it, man. I
unique
love
direction.
it.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, also with regards to time, thanks a lot, Zach, for coming onto the podcast. I think it was a really good introduction to insect cultivation as a whole. There's definitely a lot of like benefits, sustainability, and nutrition-wise, but also it sounds like as it is an emerging market and an emerging industry, there's a lot of challenges. So I'm glad to have gotten you onto the podcast early on enough in the industry, and maybe I'll have to come back to you in a couple of years once all these problems have been solved. And who knows, maybe your GPT will have solved a lot of those issues, and it'll be really interesting to hear how that happened.
I love that. It'll be running my farm, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it'll be a mix of ChatGPT, GPTs, and the Optimus from Tesla, right?
Yeah, I'll be sitting on the couch watching the footy or the cricket or something like that.
Perfect.
Nah,
Perfect.
awesome. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate having me.
Absolutely. So I'll have your website, of course, up on the show notes of the podcast. Are there any other places? I mean, your YouTube as well. Are there any other places that you'd like people to reach out or follow what you're doing?
If you've got the website and the YouTube, they should be able to find my Instagram and Facebook and rah rah rah.
Perfect.
If you're listening to the podcast too and you want to send me a message, more than happy to chat about anything. Like I love all these topics that we've talked about, and yeah, so I'm more than happy to chat and debate. whatever it might be.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast, Zach.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for listening to this week's Future Tech and Foresight podcast. If you like what you've heard here, there are, of course, a number of ways that you can support the podcast. The best way would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give a rating on Spotify, which you can find a step-by-step explanation for on the futuretechandforesight.com website. Alternatively, feel free to leave a comment either on the episode show notes or the YouTube channel where you can see video recordings of the interviews. And finally, if you are part of an organization that is aware of the disruptive and transformational impact that emerging and future technologies will bring and want to know more, please get in touch to hear about the strategic foresight services that we offer and how we can help future-proof your organization and take advantage of the phenomenal opportunities available to survive and thrive in the future.
A lot of future shock people and future shock institutions in our society are simply overwhelmed.
Once there is superintelligence, the fate of humanity may depend on what the superintelligence does.
Science fact is catching up to science fiction.
The first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention that humanity needs to make.
The only scarcity that will exist in the future is that which we decide to create ourselves as humans.
Within a 10-year design revolution, we can have all humanity living the highest and living anybody's ever known.
Progress is accelerating at an exponential pace, and it's going to reach a point where progress is so fast, it's going to be a singularity.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens.
Every single headline points to the birth pangs of a Type 1 civilization.